This week, on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer. It's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
This is going to be interesting. 8 days into Nancy Guthrie's disappearance, purported ransom notes have become the centerpiece of the public narrative. But the behavioral profile of those notes raises more questions than answers. At least three identical letters were sent to media outlets demanding millions in Bitcoin, containing non-public details about Nancy's home, yet providing no way for the family really to respond. The family has now gone on camera saying, "We will pay." What does it all mean? Joining me, we have Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to help break all of this down. We're going to be doing this into a couple different sections here. I want to talk about the ransom notes first, because there's a lot to unpack here. So much that has come out over the weekend about the various notes, the legitimacy of each one of them, the contents of all of them. Robin, ransom notes in this case were sent to three media outlets that we understand, KOLD, KGUN, and TMZ, but included no phone number, no email, not necessarily an encrypted channel, no way for the family to communicate back. In your experience with the FBI, when a kidnapper wants some money, what does a communication pattern typically look like? And is this case following any sort of communication pattern from legitimate people who legitimately want a ransom to release a hostage here?
Yeah, no. It's there's simple answers to complex questions sometimes, and this is it on the notes.
Yeah,
it's not legitimate. I mean, the legitimate notes from the perpetrator. Yeah, sure. But legitimate that their primary focus was ransom for money for a life, low probability because of what you just said. You know, we keep going to the stats, the averages, and then common sense, and we just play things out. If money was the objective, then they would make it easy to get the money. And it's not. The first thing that everyone does in a ransom case is show proof of life. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they also do is keep it extremely private and away from law enforcement as much as possible and celebrity notoriety, so they have a greater chance of manipulating the family into giving the money. None of this is at play right now.
Do you think this just got bigger than they anticipated? That this, whatever happened, it just exploded?
I think it's a distraction and of a panic escalation inside that house. I'm going back. I'm still holding firm on what I've said from the very beginning on this. This was a panic escalation of a home invasion slash robbery by someone that had some sort of familiarity with Nancy in her home. And if you're looking at the law of averages for home invasions and robberies of elderly people, they typically target them for one, they think they have money. Two, they think they'll remain asleep while the invasion's going on. Something went sideways in that house for an escalation, and they took her to keep deflection away from the fact on themselves so they can get away. That's the law of stats and averages. Again, my mind always remains open to new data and information coming in, but from what we're seeing that is publicly available, this is what we're leaning towards right now.
Are we even talking about the same people? Are we talking about the same people that took Nancy Guthrie as being the same people behind any of these notes, or are these two totally different crimes that are taking place? And this, the notes, you know, really, they give hope when there doesn't seem to be a lot of it. And we're clinging to this idea that maybe these are legitimate, but there's not a lot of evidence to point to that they are. I mean, if this was a home invasion gone wrong, if it escalated, she woke up, something happened, and they're like, well, shit, the only way we're not going to get caught is if she's gone. Whether that means she's kidnapped or she's dead. If you're doing a home invasion, you're not in the business of kidnapping people, typically. Right. So the idea that, hey, let's hold her for ransom just suddenly doesn't seem to be a logical idea. It doesn't seem to track very well. What does seem to track is that, oh, she saw us, she can turn us in now. Or maybe she scratched somebody, it'll be DNA and she will be part of the evidence. So we better get rid of the evidence, meaning her. And I'm not trying to be cold or callous, I'm just speaking on what this is. Are these two totally different things? What's your take on that?
I think it's a moronic escalation of a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah.
One thing that's been consistent with all the cases we've covered, guys, is the fact that none of these people are intelligent. Zero. Yeah. There's zero emotional intelligence. And so every time someone says they're sophisticated or using, you know, Bitcoin sophisticated technique, okay, maybe one element, but the rest of it's complete chaos and stupidity. And so what you have here, and again, it's typical on cases that are similar to this, is that in a panic mode where things didn't go according to plan, and they never ever do when you're dealing with human life and their desire to remain alive and intact, is that things go sideways and people very rarely, especially when you have low emotional intelligence, plan for things going sideways. So having a plan B or C, so they're improvising on the fly. A lot of times when you hit panic mode, improvising on the fly, you do dumb things like take bodies, take people. And then, so again, you do your thought experiment, place yourself in the moron shoes.
Moron. And that is, moron. It's a sophisticated like way of saying moron.
Like a shop at the Target.
Yeah, the morons at the Target.
Morons. I listen to too much Audible books. And so you place yourself in the moron's shoes and they're thinking, all right, I forgot to grab anything in the house, or there was nothing there because the daughter takes care of everything. And so in panic mode, after they depart the house, let's see if we can get something from this. Let's say we have her and hold her for ransom. Let's try to cut our losses. I can totally see this as not this sophisticated operation, but a bunch of, or a few, or even just one, complete bungling idiots that tried this as plan B.
Do you think that's what happened, though? There's little pieces kind of hanging by your shoestring here that make me wonder, maybe this is what happened. I don't think statistically your odds are very good that the people with the home invasion kidnapped her for ransom.
Right.
But maybe. I mean, you have some of these notes. Harvey Levin from TMZ, they got one of the notes. He has described the note as grammatically perfect, structured, and layered. That doesn't mean a lot. Maybe it does. I'm going to run it all by
maybe
you.
Maybe he has Grammarly.
Maybe, or just had it written by ChatGPT. Boom, mm-hmm. You're done. And written with what officials called it familiarity with the Tucson area. Again, you could do it with GPT. Here's the part that that Harvey, I guess, has been sticking on. And it makes me wonder a little bit, too. Apparently, there's a reference in there about Nancy's Apple Watch and a placement of it that you wouldn't necessarily immediately think. That not in a place you would necessarily immediately think. Those are Harvey's exact words. That's the quote when he was describing where that watch was. So that makes you think, oh, maybe there is some information in this ransom note that is something only a kidnapper would know. A lot of the other pieces that have been leaked out or that we're talking about, I don't know. To me, it just reads like, take a guess. And like, if you throw 20 facts out there about a 84-year-old woman and her home, and if you just look at the house, you Google the house, you walk, if you have any familiarity with the house, you could probably list a bunch of things that one may say, well, maybe only the killer would know, or the kidnapper would know this or that. But in reality, anybody with an educated guess could probably guess you have a backyard floodlight and things of that nature. What Nancy was wearing that night. We don't know what Nancy was wearing that night when she went to bed because Nancy's not around. So I don't even know how we actually answer that question. From a behavioral standpoint, what does this level of this possible interior knowledge with the notes tell you about who likely wrote them?
So I again, we'll talk about this on the other parts, yeah. I'm sure. But so if we keep going down my road of probability and of home invasion going sideways, from someone that had knowledge of Nancy, her home, which comes down to it was a worker of some sort, someone that was involved. And I'll use my own family as an example. So my mother-in-law lives down in Florida. Mm-hmm. A number of years ago when they first moved down to Florida, she's elderly. She's roughly Nancy's age now. And, you know, when they have workers come to the house, my wonderful, kindly mother-in-law will take someone that's maybe working on a roof. She'll invite them in. She'll give them some iced tea. Yep. She'll sit them down, have some lemonade, walk them around the house, offer the bathroom, all these things that good, honest, yep, ethically and moral people do for others out of the kindness and generosity of their heart. It is very, very easy for someone nefarious intentions to take up all those data points, log them in, make a note, and there you go. I mean, this is such an easy thing for a malicious social engineer to do, with very limited access. Just a one time. I mean, think about the amount of data that you could take in a 30-second or 2-minute bathroom break inside someone's house to get exactly all the details you need to do that. It's no time at all. And so the inside job, I think it was an inside job. I think it was an inside job by someone who's worked inside that house or outside that house that used the bathroom or something like that from Nancy, who is a good, kind woman that everyone loved to death, or is a referral from someone at the church, or, you know, her daughter who is doing all the caretaking, setting up all the, most likely, we don't know because it has been reported, but setting up all the appointments, setting up all the maintenance on the house. She did it for years and years and years. And so there's the treasure trove of information. It's coming from the one person or one family that was doing all the caretaking of everyone that had access in and out of that house.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about the crime scene, and we're going to talk about all of the activity, not only at Nancy's house, but also Annie's house over the weekend in just a little bit. So I want to get to that. I want to keep talking about the ransom area right now. I mean, there's so many facets to this case, but we got to kind of break them down in a way that makes sense. Otherwise, we have chaos. And that's what I've been trying to wrap my brain around all weekend. The family has posted, as of our recording here, three separate videos over the last several couple days. I've obviously asking for proof of life, saying we need to know without a doubt that she's alive and that you have her. And then by Saturday, the message and the language has shifted a little bit. We've received your message and we understand we will pay. That's a massive change in posture with really no public indication that proof of life was ever provided. Behind the scenes, Robin, can you give me any insight or give us any insight what might be going on? Are there communications possibly happening that are not public knowledge as of this point, or is this just kind of a blind plea out onto Instagram that hopes maybe the people who are writing these notes legitimately have Nancy?
Yeah, I think it's a blind plea. So undoubtedly, the FBI crisis negotiators and profilers are involved with helping the family craft the language and what goes in them. Everything ultimately does come down to what the family wants to do and with the support of people with reps. And there's been an escalation in what they're saying. There's an empathetic plea. There's a very transactional plea. And then there's a, hey, we'll pay plea. Mm-hmm. And all of them are a great escalation of trying to elicit response by the guy that did this. Mm-hmm. If there was communication outside of these that were back channel we're unaware of, you wouldn't be seeing these types of communication. You know, I think the greatest frustration they're dealing with right now is that you have crisis negotiators involved. But crisis negotiators, it takes two people to negotiate. This is one-sided. So they're literally blasting all they can, very well-crafted language into the Ethernet, seeing if they gather response. And the one thing they keep asking for is a proof of life. And so on the other side, there's only two possibilities, unwilling or unable.
Yeah.
And especially the deadlines have passed. We've got another one coming here shortly, we're live as we're recording this. So what happens when that next deadline passes and we haven't seen her? I mean, is it time to really start thinking the obvious here, sadly?
Do you want the stats?
Yeah.
Okay. Unfortunately, the stats are pretty clear on this. There hasn't been one case in recorded history that we know of where there has been zero proof of life given where someone's been returned alive.
What was your take on their language in that last video? I think a lot of people are talking about that, talking about, we want her back so we, and I don't have the exact verbiage, but it was about celebrating her. That makes a lot of people go to celebration of life and they think of things of that nature. Was that language crafted particularly specifically with a reason to be put in that video? I would think whatever they're going to put out is going to have run through a lot of people before it hits send. What was your take on that, the celebration? That seemed like a weird choice of words for a plea to bring a kidnapped victim back.
You know, it was an interesting choice of words. It struck me like it struck everyone else. It struck me just like it hit you, and that is the celebration of life of her passing, right? As a potentiality. And so so reverse the optic and put yourself on the other side. To me, it's an empathetic poke, I think, of trying to allow the person that did this to, hey, we want her alive, but here's some language in here. We just want her back in any condition we can get her back in. And it was more of a permission from my understanding, a permission of them to, hey, if you only have the body, we'll pay for that. Again, with the main intent, get response, give us a hint, give us something.
That we will pay message really mean we will pay, or is there some sort of hidden meaning to that? I mean, and I'm not trying to like get too elusive here, but does that mean something else? I know you've said, you know, it's designed to elicit response. It's designed to elicit something from somebody. We don't know if they have her or if it's somebody that's just trying to steal money or whatnot, but we're talking $6 million here on the line in Bitcoin reportedly. Is the deadline for Monday night with no proof of life. Who knows how this will age, but as of right now, where it's Monday morning when we're recording this, what do you think they do what should they do? I mean, I can guarantee everybody behind the scenes is saying, don't pay it without proof of life.
I don't think
but it's their know. Mom. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, it could be a complete red herring. Do you pay it? Do you let it? I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? I think, so if there's no way to track it, I don't, that there'd be no, again, this pure Robin's conjecture, right?
Yeah.
If there's no way to track it and retrieve it, you're not going to pay it. Because it'd be like taking $6 million and throwing it down a toilet. Yeah. Because at this point, I think the outcome, if you don't have a sign of life or a sign of anything or any communication whatsoever, the outcome is not going to change. And I would think the only way they do pay it is if there is a way to track it, if there is a way to have law enforcement say, go ahead, we can do something with this if you do that. I think, from my gathering from the family and from everyone involved, that we statement in there is we collectively are willing to engage and do this. We are all on board, meaning team family, team NBC, whatever it is all on board with doing this. And also you gave the, I thought she did a great job, Savannah did, of showing no reticence, no hesitation. In other words, hey, showing compliance and malleability to their desire to kind of out them on the fact that, hey, we're being compliant. Where are you?
And
yeah,
that's what
exactly. Where are you? Where are you? What are you? And I think anybody better be thinking very long and hard right now if they don't have Nancy Guthrie and they're trying to get money out of somebody. If there's ever a kidnapping case with the full resources of the United States federal government looking at you, if there is a way in hell to track this, and we know from, you know, any sort of, you know, regular human being using Bitcoin or some of these methods here, there are untraceable ways of doing this. But if there's some way of doing it, they're going to have that way available at this point in time. It may be doubtful that that's even a possibility. It might not be a lever that can be pulled no matter who you are. But anybody that's out there demanding money at this time, they will very likely find you. So you better have something or don't play this game.
I think they're running hard. I think the abduction aspect of this, the ransom aspect of it, is a distraction from them running hard.
Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack. Hidden Killers Pod is where you can go to get to the Substack. And YouTube, obviously, weigh in on the conversation there. Let's move to another portion of this. The physical evidence at Nancy Guthrie's home has been the subject of intense scrutiny, not just for what investigators have found, but for what they've missed and how the scene was handled initially. The crime scene was released back to the family just one day after Nancy was reported missing, then re-entered four separate times over the following week. A rooftop camera overlooked for 5 days. Chain of custody questions are already being raised by legal analysts. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us to help us break down our conversation about the crime scene that we've been looking at on a Sunday afternoon. They got into what appears to be a septic system. At least that's what the conjecture has been from everybody that's seen the video of them opening a hole in the ground. This is an area that we do know does not have like a public sewer system. Every home and neighbors have said, yes, we all have our own septic tanks. So that's likely what the hole in the ground in the pit that they were, you know, scraping around in is. Let's just start there. Supposedly, you know, we have no suspects. We don't have any vehicles of interest. These are the things that are being publicly said. And there's supposedly these ramps and notes, and they're willing to pay, yet they're digging into the septic tank. What's going on?
as they're getting more data and they're getting more people, more likely they're getting more people in with the experience of doing these sorts of things. They're having to go back in and do things that weren't done before or redo things that weren't done at the level they wanted them done. Septic system, fantastic. I'm glad they're not on a city sewer, because if there was something that was disposed of through a bathroom in some way, secreted down a drain, they're going to take all the drain stops out, as well as the septic. They can examine that as well for whoever was inside the house using those things. And if it was an inside type of job of a worker or something, stuff might have been there, you know, for last week too. So, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. So I'm glad that we're seeing them do those sorts of things, grabbing things off of roofs. Now, the sequence of it, giving things back, there's some chaos, I think, at the leadership level of this, as we're seeing. But the fact that they're still doing a lot says a lot of good things to me. I'm glad they are. And I don't think that the main scene is really at Nancy's house. I think Annie's house is going to have a lot more at it, just because, again, it really depends on the caretaker side of an aspect of this.
And I want to talk about that, because there's been some reporting on this from reporters that I know and that I trust and that we know and that are good, that are not just going to throw random things out there. Ashley Banfield's not going to Reddit and running with just random shit that she finds. And some of the early reporting that was done on this that she's gotten a lot of flack for talks about possibly the son-in-law being looked at as a prime suspect. Now, there's been no official word of that whatsoever. That was from her reporting from a trusted source, according to her, somewhere within the ether of this ecosystem. I want to talk about that, not from an angle of is this the guy or anything like that, but how that reporting can be accurate and he may not be our person by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. Whereas at that moment in time, early in the investigation, whatever day that was, like day two or three or something, that reporting came out, the investigation may have been looking at him as a prime suspect. They're going to look at family first. They're going to look at the people closest to her first. So at that moment in time, that sentence, that headline may be accurate. As investigations continue to progress, you rule people out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Nobody knows at this time if he's ever even been a suspect whatsoever, or if he's been ruled out, or if he's even part of the conversation of such things. But both can parallelly be true, where at a moment it is true, but it's not the person at the end of the day. That's why it's not always the best idea to run and publish that information until you actually know who truly is a long-term suspect, not just who's the flavor of the day at mm-hmm. that moment in time. Let's talk about the optics here, because a lot of people are still looking at this going, oh my gosh, but look at all the activity at Annie's house and her husband's house. Look at, they were in there, they were taking pictures over the weekend. They were going in and out. There was, from people are speculating that there was a Cellbrite computer that went in to scan the information off the cell phones and all that. And okay, that can be true. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they had anything to do with the disappearance. You have some interesting thoughts on that as an investigator. Give me your take on that.
Yeah, I thought long and hard about this, Tony, and I like that they're at Nancy's house doing a lot, because as I took a step back and said, all right, what would cause someone to do that? What would make investigators do that? And so let's look at this. So here's Nancy, elderly woman, and Annie's been her caretaker as reported and seen for quite a while now.
Yeah.
As caretaker, they would be the ones that were most likely setting up maintenance on the house, medical appointments, you know, lawn mowing, plumbing work, roof work, you name it, it was going through Annie. And so when she's setting things up, whose records is it going to be in? Is it going to be in Nancy's or in Annie's? Mm-hmm. It's going to be in Annie's. And so if I was going to do a digital deep dive, am I going to do it on the elderly lady who's just being told by her daughter what's coming and when is it going to happen? Or am I going to do it on the daughter's house and all the electronics inside that house? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they're doing a deep electronic dive inside of Annie's house with all electronics and bringing in equipment and everything, good. That means the fact that they're still there means they're getting a lot. They're getting, because there's years and years and years of data. And so what they're doing is they're collecting all this data, all the contacts, all the contractors, absolutely everything. And now they got to follow those leads on all those people, all those timelines, everything, right? And here's the other thing. Every single case that I've ever covered where someone inside a tight circle might be a suspect for a period of time that might have something to hide, you know what they do? They lawyer up and say, no more access. Not the case here. And then you go even a deeper level on this. Yes, the family is always the first. Elizabeth Smart's father said this on Fox the other day and other channels that, you know, they have to rule out the family first because the law of averages say that's most likely who it's going to be involved in, because these things are so rarely random. It's, and you start in these concentric circles, family, associates, and out and out and out and out. And so you start at the family first to rule them out. And so you are going to look at everyone first, you know, so Ashley Bansfield's sources were most likely accurate that they was a suspect, like everyone was a suspect in that first degree of separation, then you rule them out. Mm-hmm. But if it was more than that, again, they would have lawyered up. They would not have given continued access. But then you do a deeper dive on Tommaso. Tommaso is a sixth grade charter school teacher in biology and science. Mm-hmm. He has got no criminal record, no background. There's zero arc of this type of unhealthy behavior. And if they're so hard up for money, there's a lot of easier ways like robbing a bank than there is of doing this. So it just does not. He and the family, the immediate family, Nancy's family does not fit. Again, I am always open to outliers. Yeah. And this could be an outlier because we don't have all the data. We don't have everything. I'm just telling you from what we're observing from the outside, this is what explains behavior of law enforcement, focusing in on that household as the primary caregivers, as the ones that set up contracts and people have access to Nancy, that I would be treasure troving, get all those data points in there. And if someone inside that house was fearful of them being discovered as the real perpetrator of this, they wouldn't have given access anymore, at least without search warrants and everything else. But there's been the appearance of, could be different behind the scenes, but appearance of complete cooperation. And it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, you got to kind of view Annie's house and her husband's as almost an extension of Nancy's.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to do that is anybody out there who has elderly parents or anybody that cares, that's the caregiver for somebody that doesn't live in your home. Your records, all of that, just think about it for a second. How much of that is, you know, literally their information that had they been a little bit younger in life, that would have all been in their house. They would have been taking care of it, but they don't anymore. And they have a caregiver that's doing it. So that's pretty freaking normal. That's nothing odd. I think everybody is very quick to go, police are at X location. They must be getting bad guy. That's not how this works.
Nancy's house is ground zero for information.
Yes.
Yes.
And to the quote that just came across from our listener, it's fantastic. If you are trying to get money from your 84-year-old mom, just wait a couple years. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever.
None of it makes a lot of sense. This doesn't, I mean, and look, I don't know the finances of the family. Obviously, Savannah makes money, but that doesn't mean Savannah's just passing out checks, you know, to people either. Again, like you said, if someone is in some sort of a financial strait, and we've seen that in other cases, this would be the path of most resistance to get that money. This is not exactly like the quickest way or the most efficient way of obtaining money for whatever you needed. Abducting your mother-in-law this doesn't make sense. It's not a logical path. And yes, could there be outliers? Of course there could be. But if we're looking at the laws of averages here, what makes sense? Let's just follow the path of least resistance in Occam's razor. And look, none of that seems to add up. It makes for like the horrible, this, if you're going to put this into a movie script, sure. But is it that? No, like you said, the family is not lawyered up. They've been cooperating extensively in every possible way they can. Yep. Could someone have been looked at as a suspect for a moment in time? Of course. Sure. Does it mean it went anywhere? No. But that could be just how that's how you flush out an investigation. Yep. There's so many questions.
And I'm sorry. So think about this. So you're the investigator, you're the interviewers, and you're going to the mom's house first, and you're getting some data points in, and you're investigating there. And there's not a lot there because it's she's an elderly woman, it's an empty house, probably got some photos, got some nice things. But then as time's progressing a little bit, and you find out Annie's the main person, and the shock of what's going on wore off a little bit, and Annie's and her husband are thinking to themselves, well, we did this, and the investigators, you did what? You set up what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, we handled everything in her life. Oh, we got to refocus over here now.
Yeah.
It just when it's always about what makes sense. It's always the path of least. It's generally what makes sense is what is going to really what happens in the end. When you try to make things too complicated by these big nefarious things, I've never seen it work out that way. It just doesn't because. Yeah. If it was, it's an outlier. What happens in outliers, there's more people involved, more mm-hmm. leakage. And the messaging they're using was really good, you know, in the messages, the family messages they put out. You would have flushed out at this point if there's a probability of someone else involved with some sort of empathy that could give info. I mean, because you knew if there was a cabal of two or three people that had Nancy abducted, there'd be infighting like this. Well, you'd have one person, give me the money, or give me communicate. We need to make sure. I mean, you'd be having infighting and then someone would break and leak or do something and we're not seeing any of it.
Let me
and
ask
that's how you, that works, right? I mean, yes. This is, yeah, okay.
Let me ask you this, because this is another interesting thing that's been taking place over the last several days. The helicopter several have seen it circling over the area, and I saw the flight path of it the other day. You're an aviation guy. Did you see the flight path of this helicopter, the circling, the gazillion circling over, I don't know how many times, but it was a lot, kind of over the property. Over and over and over and over. I don't know how many times it was, but it was a lot of circling. I'm as you being an aviator, you know a hell of a lot more about that world than I do. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm not even going to give you my conjecture. What's your conjecture? Why? Why were they doing that? What do you think they were possibly trying to glean by circling the helicopter over the property for the crazy amount of times that they were?
You know, I'm a little befuddled, not super befuddled by it. So the aviation assets have a lot of interesting equipment on board that they can do a lot of things with. And obviously they're using that interesting equipment in doing this. I think they're really trying to identify surveillance locations that were used outside the house. They're looking for disturbed ground. They're looking for tips and leads around that property, as well as maybe terrain mapping it, I really think they're looking for disturbed soil kinds of stuff.
Yeah. My other thought, and I'm going to give you this conjecture on it, because we've already talked in this case about Bluetooth connections here, one being Nancy's heart.
I looked at this.
And her pacemaker and her phone or her watch, her Apple Watch. I am wondering, are they getting a signal from somewhere near that property that somehow points back to Nancy?
I looked at this.
Yeah. Okay. Give me your thoughts.
So when you're dealing with new situations, it forces you to innovate in ways that you couldn't, that you never thought of before. And so, and I'm sure a lot of people have looked at this too. So pacemakers cannot be used as GPS devices, but they do give off signals and do automatically connect to a device if they're within 100 feet. I think it's around the max range of that. And so it's going to really depend. So, because I was really looking at, is there a way that they could actually roam that property and use something to actually trigger a download if that pacemaker, well, it won't get gruesome, but if that pacemaker is anywhere around on that property in any way. The jury's out on it. It would do a download to like her watch or her synced device, because the pace. So here's the bottom line. The pacemaker does not stop working if the patient stops working.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so there is a possibility of being able to, I think with a lot of good science at it, might be able to do something with that maybe, but it'd have to be really, really close proximity. I don't think a helicopter overhead would be able to do anything with that.
It makes me, I mean, it's not like it's not like Nancy is a cell tower, you know?
No,
like,
she's not going to ping.
Like, if you're kind of landing and you're like, it's supposed to be an airplane mode, but I got a signal, you know?
Right. Very, very low energy ping, not even a ping. It's a low energy download that happens when you're in a close proximity. Because remember, they don't open up the heart every couple months to replace the batteries.
It's a Bluetooth connection. I mean, it's like, it's you walk across your house and your music stops playing. Oh, I'm too far away from the Bluetooth.
Right.
It's the same principle.
Yep.
Your thoughts, everybody, thus far on the conversation, give it to us on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. You can join us there. It's free to join right now. There's no fee. Everything is accessible, and you get all of our reporting a day in advance. I'd love to get your thoughts there. Also on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Find us there and weigh in. Let's continue the conversation here about Nancy Guthrie and what is going on right now. What we're seeing versus what we're being told officially hasn't lined up very well. But that doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. As of right now, as of this recording, we're being told there's no suspects, no person of interest, no vehicles connected to Nancy Guthrie's disappearance. That's what the Pima County Sheriff's Department has said publicly as of right now. I wanna start there. With them saying no suspects and no vehicles of interest. I thought that was an interesting antidote that was added in there as well. That was in a statement that they released online in lieu of actually giving a press conference. Thank God, because I think Nanos should probably step away from the mic. Step away from the mic, Nanos. Please step away from the mic. Just for the integrity of your investigation and your own future. That being said, no vehicle. They looked at Annie or her husband's vehicle. I'm not quite sure which one. They're looking at the house, and we were just talking about that. But it's interesting that they threw that into this conversation of vehicles, and they're saying no suspects. Okay, so that's what's been going on. But this is, I mean, obviously investigations. The public-facing side of it, they don't have to tell you that they know anything or that they're looking at anybody. Look at the Koberger case. James Fry was saying right away, we have no suspects, we have no leads. They were already following Brian Koberger back to Pennsylvania when he was making that statement at that moment in time. They already had his name from the DNA that they discovered on the knife sheath in that case. But they're publicly saying, we don't know anything. And they can do that. It certainly may have credibility issues when you go back and reconcile it, but it is what it is. It's protecting the integrity of an ongoing investigation. What can you speak to there when they're telling us this publicly versus what may actually be happening behind the scenes?
Yeah, typically law enforcement will tell you they have nothing and give you very little so that the person that they actually are tracking doesn't, you know, dig a hole deeper to hide.
Sure.
Yeah, and that is very typical in this one. But to say they don't, so here's what's interesting. They say they don't have any suspects or people of interest right now. Absolutely, they don't, haven't zeroed in on someone. But based on everything that we're talking about and the fact that they're looking at, we're looking at probabilities that this, because of the level of detail they knew about Nancy and they're able to share in the cryptic messages they have, this wasn't like here's what, very low probability this was a random home invasion gone sideways. It was a targeted home invasion. And most likely, if we're looking at averages, this individual or individuals that did this had access to Nancy's house sometime, most likely in the last 6 months, 6 months, a year at the most. And so what they're doing is they're going to Annie's house and getting all the data of all the people that they had contracted, taking care of Nancy and all these things in the last 6 months or year. And now they have a pool of people that they're now investigating. I have a high suspicion and probability that they actually do have the name. They just don't know which one it is.
Yeah.
In this big pool.
Could have just even been somebody who came to deal with a clogged pipe.
Anyone that had access, that had enough observation skills and knew what they were wanted to use in the last 6 months, that had it doesn't take long. I do this all the time. I walk in some place, hell, I watch something on TV. And when you are present and baseline, things stick out the norm from you and you just remember them. And so it would only take 30 seconds to a minute or two of someone having access to Nancy inside that house to grab enough data points to be able to use in a message to say, I have her. So it doesn't take long, but it does require access. Now, granted, here's the horrendous possibility. There's a lot of horrendous possibilities, but this one is that this was some random worker that drove up the road without going through her gatekeeper of Nancy of Annie first, mm-hmm. that then got access that way. That's a possibility, and that's the case. It's a little more challenging, but that's also why day one. Or day two on this, when we saw them bring in dogs and we saw them have drones above and then the helicopter you mentioned, Tony, I guarantee you they're looking at ingress and egress pass through that area around her house, because there's a lot of woods or a lot of, I think there's woods, there's a lot of sand, rocks, and dirt around that place that I think they'd be using for ingress, observation, egress, because they were there long enough, secreted in the woods around her house, to know when she came home. And again, going back to the family, you don't keep having dinner. If this, I think this was a routine dinner they had or got together to play cards. You know, you don't have a pattern of healthy engagements with a family member if there's resentment there.
Right.
You know, and so you don't keep getting together with your mother-in-law if you hate her guts and, you know, and then drop her off at home. And then, so it had to be someone watching, knowing that pattern behavior, using that evening in particular. And they hit it. So they're going to be looking that area around there, because as we've seen in other cases, people do stupid stuff, especially on egress. You know, Brian Koberg left a knife sheet when things went sideways and chaos ensued for him. And same thing during this escalation. When things went sideways, that's when stupid people even get stupider. And they leave shit behind in the woods, whatever it is.
I don't think it was a game of Royal Rummy gone bad where, damn it, she won all the pennies tonight. And then, let's go kill her. I mean, I that just doesn't make any sense.
No.
So if we, for the conversation here, because we don't know anything, if we were to say, okay, family's out of the picture here. This is not somebody that did it from the inside in terms of the family doing this. If this is somebody on the inside of the circle of help, of contractors, of people here and there that had something to do with this, what do you think the goal was? I mean, the idea of this being a kidnapping for ransom, again, it is a huge outlier. That's not a common thing that happens, because it's not usually successful in any, if you want like to get arrested and go away for the rest of your life, go kidnap somebody for ransom and
especially
see how well that
84-year-old.
Yeah. See how that works out. Like it's not a modality of most criminals. Home invasion on the woman who has the $1 million house, who has the famous daughter, who would likely probably have some valuables there that could be easily snatched up and taken. That might be an attractive target for somebody. Yeah. And it doesn't take a whole lot of planning to think that, gee, there might be some accessible things there. And the worst case scenario I have to deal with is, amateur hour security, which is a Ring camera. If that wasn't even on a Nest camera, that's not even on a subscription, which it wasn't. It seems like it could have been a fairly easy target for a home invasion. There's not a lot of home invasions in this area. They have a fairly low crime rate. But if we're to look at who did this, and let's say it is somebody who did have access or knew about how to get access, was the goal kidnapping and ransom, or was it home invasion gone wrong?
Law of averages, is home invasion go wrong? So let's look at this one. So here's my conjecture had of what I'd be doing as the investigator right now. So you have this event right here, and you have someone who obviously put some planning into this to some extent, where they had access to Annie, had access to the house. Nancy.
Nancy.
Had access to the house and maybe some reps. It looks like this was not like their first rodeo of having done this, but maybe it's the first one where it went sideways and the suspect died or had an issue or found them out alive. And so what I'd be doing now as the investigator is, after I'm collecting all this treasure trove of data points from Annie's house, of all the potential contractors and people in and out of there, I'm now going to cross-reference, as I'm looking up all those people, I'm going to cross-reference all the work that they've done in the last 5 years. I'm then going to cross-reference and overlay that with robberies that have taken places that seem to correspond to where these people have been. Because if this was not the first raid, remember, everyone doesn't go from 0 to 100.
Right.
The likelihood of this home invasion trying to get money from the elderly old woman that is actually a relative of Savannah Guthrie, that fits a plausible scenario of who would be targeted. So there'd be other people similarly with a similar home, similar lifestyle that would have been targeted by a group like this in the past. And so I think being able to cross reference and overlay that potentiality is what they're also doing right now.
With that being said, if this is a home invasion gone wrong, which I'm leaning more towards that, if it was that and it was someone who, like, oh God, I got to get rid of her because she's the evidence, because she saw me or whatever. And there is no kidnapping. There is no, if we're going to assume here that these kidnapping and these ransom demands are really a completely separate crime, have truly nothing to do with Nancy Guthrie other than in name and people trying to be opportunistic in a real sick way. After these deadlines pass, I mean, at what point do authorities say, okay, the kidnapping thing is bunk. No matter how much more comes in, we're more than a week into this. Nobody's given us proof of life. If they want money, we've already said we're going to give it to you. And yep, Nobody's given us a way to actually do it other than here's our Bitcoin wall, but we're not going to prove it to you. If you want your money, prove it. You'll get money immediately. Like, they've already said they'll do it. If you have her, the window's right. Open. The ball's in your court. But if you don't get any of that, I mean, we're really, I mean, I'm not trying to be dark, but it is what it is. We're looking at a real possibility here that we never truly find out where she is, that they never get her back. I mean, and I think we're also looking at the possibility here is they're 60 miles from the Mexican border. If somebody did this, that doesn't want to be caught, you could easily be gone by now. And will never be found again. Could we end up going down that road pretty quick?
It's possible. I think it's definitely possible. You know, unfortunately, when you're looking again at the probabilities of what happened and the outcomes, I think we have a decent probability of zeroing in on some potential people that did do this. But where they're at and being able to find them, that again comes down to that border issue being so close. It might have been also why this area is targeted because of that. Again, I don't know what law enforcement knows on that, but that's what I'd be looking at is what workers in this area have just overlays with patterns. And just probability of her. I don't think the majority of the people in the investigation going on right now, as we're seeing it, is the negotiation with the kidnappers. It's trying to find Nancy.
Yeah.
And so, and treating it as a potential homicide is probably what most likely is what they're doing
behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they have to at this point. I mean, the medication that she was supposed to be taking on a daily basis, we're at day 9. It's just,
when you have resources that have a finite time that you can maintain those resources. Cause here's another thing to also remember. And I don't like highlighting this, but it's a very pragmatic look at this. Every time you take, President Trump coming out and saying all federal resources are diverted to you, we're going to find this, we're going to solve this. That's fantastic and great. Great job on it. But every time you do something like that, you're pulling agents and investigators and detectives off of one case that was very important to move it over here. There was never a point in my career or anyone's career ever knew that anyone was sitting around waiting for the call to do something big.
Yeah.
No, everyone is doing big shit every single day and investigating a lot of important people, homicides, missing children cases every single day. And all of them take a lot of pride in the fact that they pour their heart and soul and live it, into it. And so shifting from one to the other, that's fine. It's great. It happens all the time. But at the same time, though, at some point, they got to be put back onto what they were doing if things, to just do the righteous work and to it's going to come a point where they're going to have to start moving on.
Let me ask you this too, because I'm curious. I mean, at what point are there too many cooks in the kitchen as well, where too many agencies are involved, everybody doing their own thing? We know historically, you know, agencies don't typically work super great together. Everybody kind of has their own ecosystem of to which they operate. Is that a concern at all in an investigation like this, where it's like, okay, have even more resources? Great. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but again, sometimes we've already seen the difference here in the local sheriff's department versus what the FBI has been able to produce. If we add more into this, does that muddy the waters of an investigation in any way, shape, or form?
Maybe, maybe not. So we see the sheriff as the mouthpiece out front, but that's not who the lead investigator is. That's just the lead mouthpiece.
Sure.
And so if you have a really good solid lead detective, lead investigator that is local on this, that is coordinating and has a lot of reps and experience of coordinating multiple resources, it could be going very, very well. Because what typically happens is that, like the Bureau, if you're invited in or asked in or volunteered to go in and do something, you typically reach out to, hey, here's the lead investigator. Hey, my name's Robin. Here's what I have. Here's what I can do. What do you have? What do you want me to do? And I'll just stand ready to assist you. And what's happened is that lead investigator might have co-case agents that are designated to handle different angles and aspects of it. One's handling interviews, one's handling forensics, one's handling cell phones. You know, so it gets delegated down there. So it really just comes down to the lead investigator's ability to manage and lead a large team. And if they have some reps, if they have experience, I think it could be going very, very smoothly behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I get the I don't have the details. I put the mouthpiece aside sometimes, and I'm just looking at what we're seeing on the ground. From what I'm seeing on the ground, I'm okay. I think you're seeing movement on the ground.
Yeah.
We've seen cases where you're not seeing anything. You're like, is anything going on whatsoever? This one, we're seeing a lot of movement. That's good, as long as it's all coming into a central hub to be digested, analyzed, and then sent back out again for more follow-on. And so that's kind of the unknown right now, because we aren't talking, and rightfully so, to the lead investigator on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many questions, not a lot of answers yet, and that's the reality. When we don't know the answer, a lot of blanks get filled in and it turns into a Mad Libs from hell, which is what I feel like a lot of this is at right now. But very, very interesting insight, Robin, as always. Thank you for coming and giving us your thoughts on this case. I think you presented a lot of thoughts that really hadn't been aired out there yet into this. And I think a lot of it makes sense, talking about the investigation, where the family's at and what's been going on and why investigators are at certain locations that aren't because of some sort of nefarious, horrible thing. This family is living through hell right now. And I hope to God they can get to some sort of answer, because it's the unknown. It's the unknown that is the worst for everybody in this. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. As always, thank you for being here. Robin's latest book, it's right here. It's Not All About Me. Available wherever you get books. Go check that out right now. And he has a ton of other ones too. All right, check that out. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and Substack. We want you to weigh in and give us your feedback on where this is all going. We'll continue the conversation there in the comments. Press subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review as well, so you can take us with you on the go and not miss any of our coverage. Until next time. For Robin, for Stacy, and Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer. It's a diagnosis that changes everything, and yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything, and yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet, the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
When I first heard the words, you have lung cancer, I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet, the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money and refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Sheba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Sheba.com.